Where are we going? Welcome to this exclusive podcast produced by Spirit Watch Ministries that will show where life in our darkening times is now turning and how you can avoid the detours of deception through the hope of biblical truth. The Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 warned us over 2 millennia ago and how urgently we need to heed him now. Our host is Pastor Rafael Martinez, a seasoned Northwest Indiana-based minister, intercessor, and counter-cult apologist who will help you discern the journey of change we're all on as the last day of the last days now winds down. For more information, check out our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. Now, here's Pastor Rafael.
Thank you for downloading. This is Rafael Martinez, a minister in the Church of God Cleveland Movement, and I'm the director of Spirit Watch Ministries, an outreach of Christian discernment since 1993, now based in Hammond, Indiana. This podcast is called Where Are We Going? And it's our ongoing exploration of the depths of depravity found in our fallen world today, manifesting through religiously and psychologically abusive cultism. Part of the recovery from cultism is a return back to that which was lost to it. And we make no apology for upholding this simple principle. Shattered faith can be rebuilt, but must be understood for what it is and what it does to those it grievously wounds. Over the years, we've used research, interviews, and conversations with those who are directly impacted by cults to give our podcast the unique voices they have. Our podcasting, therefore, enables us to gain a Christian perspective as well into some very dark worlds of authoritarian spiritual and social slavery, for which, we hold, the light of Jesus Christ alone can guide the way out to true freedom, true peace, and true purpose. His imminent return to this world of woe is heralded by the rise of the slickest of deceptions as he warned his disciples in Matthew chapter 24 in the New Testament. We are only doing as he's commanded there, charging that you take heed that no man deceive you. Our podcast today continues with a series of interviews we had with Michael S. Black, formerly Michael Shamblin, the son of the late cult leader Gwen Shamblin Lara, who was the founder of the Way Down Workshop and the self-appointed leader and prophet of the Remnant Fellowship Church of Franklin, Tennessee. We've said from day one of our ministry that we have no interest in contributing to the last days of deception now at hand, and we've always preached, published, and defended biblical Christian truth and perspective that shows it for what it is. Our podcast today now continues with a perspective on the abuses and outrages that this movement has committed in the name of God, which were highlighted in the HBO Max docuseries, The Way Down, that our ministry helped to launch in 2021, the same year Gwen met her maker and stood before the judgment seat of Christ himself. We're thankful for Michael's contributions today. It certainly seemed that way, Michael. It just really certainly did seem to be going that way, although many people didn't quite see that your mother certainly had other plans in life. So, but anyways, let's recap. At this point in your life, you had a lot on your plate. Gwen's basically in tread the water mode. She's going through the motions, basically, there as a bored cult leader. Basically losing herself in a silent and secret preoccupation with leisure, recapturing that lost youth that she may have thought she had. She was in a marriage in name only, which is a painful thing to have to say, but we've already discussed that, of course. The product line, the Way Down Workshop was dead in the water. There just wasn't any innovation. There wasn't much she really was doing with that. And ghost writers were the journeyman banning the product line content, and at the same time, Remnant Fellowship was at a standstill, even as the renewed leadership was struggling to maintain the group's cohesion.
Right.
They had to rely more on the distraction of social life, inspired by the feasts and by the social strata of Remnant itself. Yeah, people were doing their own thing elsewhere, other places. The abusive control and manipulation was being reapplied through new congregational structures, but rehashing the message was getting kind of old for all, wasn't it, at that point? It just seemed that that's where it was stumbling.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you, ultimately, you yourself, you're trying to keep the mask on. You're still there trying to look like the part that your culture expected you to play. You're trying to be a remnant leader with clipped wings, a remnant husband, a remnant father, and you're just trying to fit in and stay out of the way. But the shaming, as we've seen, as we've heard, was just going on. You're basically window dressing, keeping a unifying myth of sacred mission and unity supported. You're just trying to get in there and just be a band-aid as much as you possibly could, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Doing whatever I could at that point.
Okay.
Just to survive. So
that's about 2016. And then 2017, the bombshell fell. That was when, as the movie goes, when Gwen met Joe Lara. Oh. So can you maybe give us just a short cap on how that took place? I know we've touched on it here and there, but how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, gosh, yeah. A lot of people have obviously hit on that subject, including you and HBO and all of that.
Yeah.
I think I just want to frame it, though, like with Gwen, maybe.
Yeah, that's
so
fine.
People kind of have an idea. You know, I think there was something going on, like fatigue with all of the stuff that, you know, she had been pursuing for so many years with the demands on, you know, the preaching and everything she's putting on people. And, you know, the churches, they're obsessed with appearances. And as we've talked about, and, you know, the curses and the leadership having to keep up with, you know, staying on people with people who mess up, or the strugglers talking about the curses on these people that are failing to live up to it. And it's just never ending. And I think it's exhausting for everybody. And so that was kind of the backdrop of Gwen just having to maintain control for so many years. And I think by this point, you know, it's fair to say, I think it had been so, besides the stuff she was doing to me, but the suffocating standards she's placing on everybody, I think she was almost kind of entering into a phase of, even she's kind of starting to not believe in Remnant, so to speak.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I think she was starting to be worn out. That's what I mean. She's worn out. It's been going on for so long. So she's starting to be a little bit more disillusioned, especially if you look at all the stuff we've talked about in the previous episodes, everything that had happened leading up to that. So that's the backdrop, I guess, so to speak. And then, like you said, Joe Lara's coming on, and, you know, I mean, this was a period, you know, Gwen, there had been so many years where she was just like wishing for my dad to like pass away, or, you know, she'd had years of that, you know, or thinking about wanting to force him to leave her.
Yeah.
And that's not something that he would have ever wanted.
I mean, I've heard you say that. I've heard you say that now. I've heard many other people say the same thing. They've actually heard her desire that he would just pass. He'd be gone out of the picture.
Right. And we already know Remnant does stuff like praying for the death of their enemies kind of stuff. So it's not, I don't think it's a huge stretch to imagine that she was praying for God to take him. I even remember her talking about it in meetings. I want to say, what was the man's name, Nabal David, when he met the woman So you know, the story of King, you maybe could explain this better, but the story of King David, when he's traveling with this group of guys and they come across a home, and the wife helps David.
Right.
And the man is like kind of this mean husband. He's like this overweight, whatever.
Right.
Nabal, right. Was it Nabal or something?
Yeah,
that's. So anyway, she's like being nice to King David, right? And doesn't he like die or so?
There
talking about the man that he was like when David's on the run and they come across a place and they're hungry and the woman comes out and feeds them.
Yeah, that's Abigail.
Abigail. And
Abigail's
then,
wife. And I don't, I'm sorry again. I'm
just, okay. Either way, the husband's like this old, you know, heavy guy. And Gwen kind of used that story. I feel like that's kind of the foreshadowing of like Joe Lara being compared to like a King David, so to speak. Uh-huh. There was a lot of things you could look at comparison to that. So anyway, you've got Joe coming in because David ended up marrying Abigail, basically, because Nabal or whatever the guy's name was.
It was Nabal. I'm sorry. We were confusing it too. Naboth was many years later with a vineyard, but Abigail was the wife of Nabal, who then married King David after Nabal's death.
After he died, so then she ends up getting to marry the king, right?
Right, and, correct.
So Joe's, you know, coming into this situation of, you know, I think everybody's got a pretty good idea about the environment. I mean, y'all did such a good job of explaining it, you know, Gwen, you know, having work done on Ashlawn, the church, and Joe Lara, like, being introduced to her in a very pointed way.
Yeah.
And just that period, I guess, I think at that time, I think he's loving the praise because she's just pouring it on.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I think the word had gotten around that he was something of like a movie star and B movies. And, you know, the women, he was some hot Tarzan actor. And the women, you know.
He is ripped. At one time.
Oh, yeah. And
everyone knew that. But how did that play? I mean, I'm just interesting. How did that play in the social scene in Remnant? I mean, when he shows up with her at a church service for the first time, what was that like? What was the reaction? What were people saying about this sudden emergence of him? Was that expected? Was it startling? And what was going on?
I mean, it quickly became something like the talk of the women run town, put it that way. I mean, I mean, there was something in the spell casting air. So, I mean, that's my opinion, but far as like the crazy Remnant culture is concerned. So most people would fall into the category of completely being awestruck with how, and I say this like in quote, almost quotations, like God had supposedly sent this overwhelmingly perfect, handsome King David-like man, you know, and a Remnant. Like he's her knight in shining armor.
Yeah.
And there wouldn't even be a question about his questionable past within Remnant. Like and I'll say this, and maybe this is a little uncomfortable for a Christian podcast, but I'm just going to say it because it's reality.
We don't live in comfort.
You can edit it out if you don't like it.
Don't worry. We don't live in comfort in this place. Where we go is often very uncomfortable. You go right ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say it. Like, I think a lot of, they actually were almost kind of in quote unquote, like turned on at this point. Like, I mean, there's a lot of women, and this is my point of view. I call it the women's movement. Okay. There's a lot of these women, they're wanting a more perfect Remnant husband in this church. And I think this was kind of an exciting time for them. And also the fact that he had been in kind of racy sort of videos, B movies. Believe me, word gets around in the church, and even the Tarzan, the shirtless thing. I mean, this is the preacher marrying a guy that's most of the pictures on the internet are like, he's not wearing any clothes. Right.
Yeah, and, right.
I would say lust was kicking into higher gears for sure. Many of these women. Sure. And
not dust outright, you know, human male, female attraction being what it is. It's perfectly natural, normal to understand males being attracted to females and vice versa, you know, and you got a bunch of women here who see a very attractive man in their midst, they're going to respond. It's going to put a spin on things.
That's right. And they weren't, as far as I know, they weren't even looking. Like, they weren't even trying to find out anything negative on his past.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's, you know, if someone ever said anything, I mean, I remember people would every now and then bring up something, but it's like jokingly played off. Like, I mean, these are remnant loyalists. To Gwen Shamblin. And I think, as far as I know, every single man and, you know, woman was following suit with Gwen.
Yeah. So it was like, it really wasn't too hard for him to show up. And suddenly, like almost overnight, everybody mm-hmm. just accepts him. He's assumed the rulership, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He's earned a place at the head of the table.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. That's, well, you know, that's, well, given what, like we said, the environment was that if Gwen says 1 + 1 = 3, it's what's going to be, you know, and in this case, she had her own relational math there. So, but contrary to that, what was the reaction of your father and your sister to all that? I can't even imagine how that could have played with you guys.
Well, I mean, he wasn't, as far as like, he wasn't aware of Joe, as far as Remnant's concerned, to my knowledge, before, like when Joe was coming in to the church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was really aware of this until he was served papers. This is what my memory is.
Okay.
I really couldn't speak to anything else beyond that, because if he did know something, he wasn't telling me.
Yeah.
But he, yeah. As soon as that's happening, he's quickly starting to research, you know, and ask around everything under the sun once he did get served, once he did realize. Yeah. I think he actually talked with Natasha Pavlovich as well at some point. Right. Once the whole divorce, but that's once the divorce situation starts kicking in. And I think possibly his friend, he was briefly an attorney for Remnant, Samuel Harris, possibly was tipping him off on some stuff.
Yeah.
But I think he was, I mean, how was my dad? I mean, he was just in a somewhat state of anger and resentful shock for the longest time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was the only person who was still actively seeing him. Like, we would often go to lunch and talk about it once it became the conversation. And he would, you know, he was mainly telling me how he would have never have served Gwen divorce papers or done anything like that. His full intention, he wanted to live to an old age with all the help they had at Ashlawn. But anyway, you know, I think we talked over a lot. I mean, how this was essentially adultery. Gwen was in the process of and had been committing once they were, you know, separated when Joe was around. And there was, I mentioned this to Phil Williams, but there was something he mentioned to me about the talks about there was this secretive Chapel Hill bank account that Gwen had set up just strictly to purchase things for Joe Lara. Even before they're married.
Yeah.
So
all right.
I think that he mentioned, you know, the attorney, you know, and once again, I think that was Samuel Harris. We called him Joey. Joey was talking to him about some of this stuff, and Samuel, you know, I guess he goes by Samuel, saying he was telling David, you're being completely left in the dust here. And he had been a family friend actually all the way back to Memphis years. He used to hang out with us at our house on Lily Lane in Memphis when Waydown was first starting. So we had known him for a long time. He had known David for a long time and Gwen. And he'd gone to law school and he'd been helping Gwen and Remnant out. But once it turned into the, like, these horrifyingly non-Christian, you know, under the table, devious marriage situations, he started backing off. And he stopped talking to Gwen, and he would still talk with David Shamblin. I don't think Dad, well, he was not appreciating how the whole situation was being turned around.
Right.
And Gwen really knew where to hit him. But as far as, you know, I think were you asking about as far as Elizabeth
too? Yeah. And you mentioned something very interesting just a moment ago. You said that by this time, the only people really interacting with your father was you. Your sister wasn't interacting with him at all.
Well,
am I reading that right? Or is there something more to that?
He was not voluntarily interacting with him. Because Elizabeth, this was the situation. She was already on the inside.
Right.
As far as, you know, Gwen's disturbing big plans to destroy David Shamblin's reputation. Okay. Because that's how it was going to end up having to play out for them. As well as, you know, to ruin his life. Ugh. With how Gwen was living or treating him.
Yeah.
You know, Elizabeth, she was acting like some sort of, you know, apprentice sitting there and watching Gwen walk this whole thing out. You know, she was completely uncaring how our father was or how he felt. Because I could see, and I've talked about this before, but she had already gone through the same weird stages of this turning into a, you know, manipulation using, you know, biatch monarch, right?
Right.
She, you know, she left her, you know, it left Elizabeth after everything that had happened with zero empathy for anyone but her own disturbing self, right? So she's not only on board with everything, but she was...
She's utterly complicit.
He was practically volunteering to
get
right.
Yeah.
And sit, you know, do whatever she could. I could tell by the way she was talking in the later meetings. I mean, these women, they were like tasting man flesh blood or something. You know, this is just closing in for another man kill.
Yeah.
But so that's where she was at that point.
Yeah. So in an instant, almost, it seems that Joe was suddenly raised up to be this anointed cherub, this God warrior come from afar. And they recognized not just as a thing going on, but as this absolute avatar, you know, arising, you know, to come alongside the prophet. I mean, and so pretty quickly he was there starting to look up to him as a leader. As someone who's going to actually start taking the reins in terms of providing spiritual headship and everything like that. Sounds to me like I said, just it came with the territory. You know, this is going to be Gwen's husband, so obviously he's going to have some sort of great spiritual insight.
Right. And that's how he's viewed. I mean, he's fast tracked into that high position.
Yeah.
And,
sure was.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's he was something close to like being Gwen's personal bodyguard or something. That's kind of what it was, kind of, you could see it happening. And this obviously was, you know, how this was affecting people, right? Leadership. I mean, it was tough on some of the higher up bar of security guys. Someone like a Ted Anger. I think I'm just going to start calling him Ted Anger. We've got to pick a pronunciation of this, because Anger Anjay, right? I think I'm just going to end up going with Anger, because that was his like birth name or something.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
But you know, Ted is imposing too, and Joe basically was deemed capable of personal protection for Gwen when he comes on the scene, like it's enough that almost some of these men are not as needed now, because Joe had the boxing skills. I don't know if people are familiar with that. He had been a boxer, lots of boxing training, as well as his sniper rifle shooting skills, which he'd been up there as high as a civilian can attain through like personal training sessions, and he was supposedly, he had friends with like ex special forces guys. I remember him talking about, you know, like he knew some ex Navy SEAL guy that lived in Florida and stuff like that. And he would go to their own personal training and ranges.
He was
very, very up there with civilian sniper training. But as far as like the church, he's nothing like anything close to having a perfect, righteously pure reputation.
Within the church.
They try to do that.
Yeah.
But even as far as the average member of Remnant, but they sort of like, and you would be able to explain this more, you know, the cult expert kind of take on it or psychology, but they're sort of like bending reality. You know, that they, you know, people have talked about, you know, like the Steve Jobs kind of thing where he can like bend reality or something. I think Remnant was being trained to be able to do that. They had made themselves worked up like how they had done for so many years with Gwen. Like you look at like we've already talked about how she got, you know, stagnant with the products. Like they were having to fake excitement.
Oh, sure.
For Gwen. And so they had practiced that so much that they were able to kind of bend this reality and fake and have the excitement for Joe. They're all of a sudden, they're just pivoting and making this the top priority to support now. Remnant has been trained by this point.
Right.
And, you know, I would just say as far as Joe, like I said, there was some kind of sexualized form of like being okay with him that like people are going along with, like it. And I know that's, it kind of gets into more kind of shady territory here, but it's like, once again, it's a women's church. You also have a lot of kind of weak-willed, I don't want to say gay completely, but there was a lot of effeminate passivity, weak-willed men. And they're just loving to talk about this guy, this Team David, overwhelmingly attractive, because their own curbed lusts had been repressed. And this to me was like seeing Remnant go into like an over the top, almost like a TBN, like something you would see on TBN mode or something.
Yeah.
With like, man, you know, the Paul and Jan Crouch, Jan Crouch with the big pink hair.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
And that I kind of,
I didn't want to say it, Michael. I didn't want to say that, but you went right where I thought it needed to go. So yeah, you were absolutely 100%, I believe, on the mark. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think I actually used to joke that they needed to buy, you know, the big spinning globe that's always behind some. I always wanted them to buy some. I always would joke with Gwen and me. I'd throw out in a meeting, like, why don't we purchase one of those big spinning gold globes behind Gwen and Joe? Anyway, I don't think they appreciated that. But you could see this happening like in real time. They were, it's almost like people wanted, I think people had been repressed for so long. It's almost like they wanted this to become like some kind of circus, like counterfeit religion,
right?
So they can go and do whatever it is they want to act on. I think they had repressed the lust for so long,
right? Well, like I mentioned, you know, there's an article, an extensive article I wrote. So, and it's a selfless promotion here. Sorry, self promotion. But there's an article I wrote that's quite extensive about that, helped me kind of lay out what I was finding, that I put up there on the website. It's been out there for several years. But the point is, I observe at this point, it seemed like that the old Remnant Puritanism was starting to, just like in an instant, start to dissolve, because now it had rediscovered virility again. It's as if the carnal, that like you said, that side of human nature that Gwen was so up against, which suddenly she's starting to take a second look at it. You know, all these men, all these women, obviously they were just swooning at Gwen's good blessing or God's favor. And then the men who have been already, I mean, I'll just say it. every man and woman is basically been emasculated emotionally, spiritually, there in Remnant. So because of the way Remnant was being conducted by Gwen,
right?
They, like you mentioned, there was a passivity there that now was being immediately suddenly just cast aside. And now, like you said, he was being offered. Joe was being offered as this new role model to look up to the both of them now. Now there's two of them now. And that of course excited everybody. Mm-hmm. That's the way it seemed to come across to everybody there. And that's part of human nature coming out. People are starting to realize, hey, there's something real to all this, and there's something. Something that they can look up to and relate to, and that's right. Where it seemed to be going. And of course, with that coming from that, his leadership style, whatever it could be, it became at that point something that just upset the apple cart. Everything there,
right? And I hated to see this guy. I mean, he's some woman chaser. Guy being lifted up, but
he's a gigolo. Who he was? I mean, that just was.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I there's no love lost there, but I wasn't even. It was messing up a lot of the top leaders. Like I said, I think there was a, especially the men that had tried to be the big, tall, imposing kind of protectors of Gwen, the top general kind of guys. But I wasn't even remotely jealous of his position by this point, because a lot of these guys, they were fighting jealousy at this point.
Oh, sure.
I think the guys like Ted, I don't know if people hit that. I don't know if that hit on that in the documentary, but I mean, they were like Ted and David and Chris Clark, who's the head of security, Rob Day. These men, there was some jealousy gunning for the spot that Joe now all of a sudden was occupying.
And, yep.
I'm not even in the running for this position at this point, So I'm just,
pivoting. It really wasn't discussed. I mean, it was discussed right. That Joe was there, but that's why I really appreciate your sharing this, because this is a dynamic within Remnant that simply has not been really discussed. It's how much of a shaking within the group, within the whole social fabric, within the cultic control of the movement that was absolutely just shaken to the core when Joe showed up. And you're bringing that out is I think very helpful, because it does show this was beyond earth shaking. This was soul shattering within Remnant. I mean, like you said, a whole hierarchy had just come crashing down, and Joe was the new alpha dog reestablishing.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's you understand the hierarchy of Remnant as well as anybody. I mean, it was certainly just you're throwing a wrench into the well-established Remnant leadership, diagram. But
as we like to say, Joe was no dope. He became the good time Charlie in Remnant Fellowship. He was the charismatic, party-loving guy who became the toast of Remnant. And all while this, you were continuing to be ghosted. You were marginalized, ignored by Gwen and everyone else, including him, except when apparently you got in his way or there was a perception that you were somehow in his way. Was any of that going on? I mean, I realize you didn't have any jealousy towards it, and I certainly understand that, but were there moments in which he had to kind of snap the whip over you in some way?
Yes. Kind of, I would say our relationship was him coming in. It was uneasy, would be the word.
Sure.
I think we were, if people understand he's an actor, right? He's still an actor. as much as all the stuff was super impressive. So we were, we've already kind of established that I was living a double life by this point.
Right. And okay.
So I'd say we were just two people acting in a way at this point.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're forced to sometimes be on the same stage. We're forced to be lifting up our hands. I don't really think either one of us was really feeling it. He hated me. I could tell.
Sure.
Coming on the scene. And he actually, this is not something I've ever shared with anyone, but he sent me a very upsetting picture one time on a text. And it was my son, newborn son, Christian, was in his baby stroller. He was still over at Ashlawn, the babysitters. And Joe sent me a picture of Christian in the baby stroller. And there was one of Gwen's obnoxious witch cats, which she would cycle through pretty fast, like they would die constantly. And one of her cats at Ashlawn is like about to jump on the sleeping baby in his stroller, my son. And so he sent that, and there was no comment or anything. I was like, what is this? Like a picture of my baby son, and a cat is like climbing up the stroller, like about to strike him, jump on him. And that's the kind of stuff that made me hate him. And, you know, I made some pretty seriously dark notes in my journal, you can bet, after that. But that's the sort of person he was. He was a monster.
He liked the full strings.
Who deserved every bit of uncomfortableness he got with living with the queen monster.
Yeah.
He was used to being able to get away with being like the cowboy type.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Like you're saying, yeah, who could say, he could say anything, he could threaten people, and people would just cower and run. So I think at this point I'm just a variable to be managed in his mind. He's not worried about me. I mean maybe I'm a slightly threatening variable, but anytime we talked, it was just super awkward, short. I wasn't trying to force him out of his position, though.
Sure.
I was just there, man.
You were just there. And like, I think you said it well. I think you both, too, maybe recognized you had to play a part in the middle of the circus.
Right. Yeah. And I'd say, you know, it was like a Cold War kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. We're
totally civil, but at any moment the nukes can be launched. You know, you
achieved a detente, for lack of a better word, and you were just trying to move through things. So with your family and like that. So, but I understand Joe had a daughter in a previous relationship with Natasha, who and she reached out to us here at Spirit Watch Ministries for trying to help her grapple with that new reality. And that Joe had just forced upon her and her daughter. Now, there wasn't was she ever when this young child, who I'll leave nameless, when she came forward and was, of course, coming to see her father and coming to see her soon to be, possibly, so to speak, stepmother, and there in the midst of all that, was there any thought of her being groomed as part of Gwen's retinue? In terms of becoming new leadership, or was she just there? Was she just, what was Gwen's relationship with her and the whole situation? And obviously Joe cared about her enough that he would start a horrible fight with Natasha over that, which is why she reached out to us for help. Well, what was that relationship like? What was that kind of dynamic in there going on that you could see?
Well, there wasn't any question in my mind that Gwen was taking this girl, we won't name her name, in like some form of a stepdaughter. There was no question in my mind Gwen was trying to do that.
Yeah.
I could sense that this girl, I could sense she was seriously not going to fit in with these like wickedly controlling lifestyle kind of women's ideas of what young girls should be like.
Mm-hmm.
that it almost would have been laughable if it wasn't just so abusively hard on these girls. And, you know, I was seeing Gwen want, like, Abby, the girl that worked for at Ashlawn, and my ex and her assistants, you know, she wanted to keep all the young grandkid girls in line and make sure they're all wearing the same Victorian older style, you know, early 1900s matching dresses. And they had these big oversized bows with the same colorations.
Yeah. I mean,
he always had a weird want for them to all dress the exact same too. But I think it was just to show everyone how she was just ever in control, how she could oversee everything.
People were her toys. They're her plaything. She could dress them as she wanted to.
So that's the environment that this girl was coming into. It was definitely different for someone raised with, like, you know, how everyone else is in the U.S. But, she made her best attempt. Gwen and especially Joe during this time, they really became super over-the-top paranoid, too, and angry, because he would FaceTime Natasha sometimes, just as she could. And they were like, I remember Gwen and Joe just, like, falsely accusing Natasha of, like, using this girl to, like, take footage of show inside of Ashlawn or something.
Mm-hmm.
Joe was just ultra just paranoid. What I think was going on, I personally think they were so used to doing things like that to other people. They're so used to getting, you know, women to FaceTime their husbands or divorce situations, custody fights, and remnant, you know, trying to, like, work people, manipulate people, that they were growing overly projecting using these techniques. So they're putting all that stuff on to Natasha. But that was, I think that was really hard on this girl and, my stepsister. And, you know, cause Gwen's, she's notorious for trying to mold people, you know, into the ideal remnant person. You know, she wants the appearance to change. She wants to be a remnant girl. She had a lot of expectations put on her as far as behavior. And Gwen, once again, she's just parading these girls around. At church, they all come in like in. It's almost like the Von Trapp. I don't know, people. That's kind of older movie, but like the Von Trapp kids or something coming in, you know, all wearing the same outfit. Gwen loved that kind of thing. That's from Sound of Music, I guess, if anybody's listening to the podcast.
Right, yeah. Right.
But, I think there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think Gwen, though, saw her as like a challenge. I think she knew that she had the right stuff. Like if Gwen succeeded with this, this would be like a huge deal to everybody to see Gwen. Oh, look, Gwen is now molded this girl coming in, her new stepdaughter, into the next remnant princess, right? This was like a project for Gwen.
Oh, yeah. And how much of that was, how much of was Joe really complicit in that? I mean, did he see what your mother was doing? And do you think there was any pushback from her, or was he totally in her thrall? Was he just totally going along with it?
I think when he took her, like, just him and her out, I bet he kind of let her loose a little bit more. Like, if he, like, took her to Waffle House or something, and I'm sure he did not make her wear the dress and the bow kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because Joe would obviously have seen. He was, believe me, he was doing the eye roll thing. He just was very careful about it. He did not do it in front of anybody.
Right.
Just like I would. But
he's playing the role.
Yeah, but he's also using everything he can. They're doing everything they can to throw everything at Natasha fighting for this custody in court, right?
Right.
So he's just on Gwen's side. They're trying to get 100% of the pairing rights, or full custody. They're trying to keep Natasha out of her life, and they were, they were saying things like, Natasha being around her, it's like some wicked form of mixing the message, that's a very remnant term, and I know you know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
But they were comparing that to Natasha, like this young daughter, she would be hearing a different Christianity message just from being in an environment with Natasha, and then that would make it harder when she comes back to see Gwen, to see Gigi. Yeah. So they wanted to completely turn this girl into a mindless Gwen worshiping robot.
Right.
And that was really tough to watch happen. I had some serious sympathy for her, because I was fighting my own battles, but I was older, and I could see her struggling, within her own young impressionable mind. Right. She's smart. She's a very smart girl. Right. And
mm-hmm.
Gwen had a run for her money. I thought she was going to have a run for her money, but obviously we see Natasha argued in the courts that, Joe's association and all that, so we saw that Natasha was, fighting, trying to make it very clear to the courts that, this was an unstable environment for this girl. And she was fighting to keep custody. She's a more stable parent, and obviously, she's contrasting everything with look how crazy that remnant lifestyle is. Look at everything that's gone on. Look at Joe's lifestyle, the financial troubles, Gwen. Well, I mean, Natasha ultimately did secure custody.
Right.
And I'm glad she did.
I am too. You surely are.
And not Joe got limited visitation, but I think that's a reflection of what, the courts thought about it and the environment.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, and we won't belabor the point here, but Natasha was an extraordinary lady. When we met her, she's a frightened, terrified woman. But underneath, there was an iron strength to her and a
mm-hmm.
firm determination. She was not going to give up on this. And
I have a lot of respect for her, for what she said, what she had to put up with.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It's just she's got. I
want to having to represent herself in court, and so she's tough. Man.
Oh
admire that.
I did too. She was absolutely just an incredible tower of strength. Just to see what she did. I won't belabor the point here, but she is writing a book about herself, about this and other things, and I won't say any more about that. I'm hoping eventually she'll come on here and share with us. We're actually pretty friendly. We actually went to their home not too terribly long ago for this dinner, and met her and her family and everything. It's just wonderful. They're just beautiful, beautiful, warm-hearted people, proud of their culture, proud of their independence, and just grateful they were able to get out of that. And she's doing tremendously. I won't say any more, but she's absolutely she's doing wonderfully in her school and her athletics and everything. And we just loved just visiting with her. It was good to finally look at her and meet her and just give her a quick hug and say, it's so great to see you, sweetie. You've come along so far. It's just, they're doing well. And
she's got a real kind of overcoming story, doesn't she?
It's an incredible story, and I wish I could spend more time with her here. But just hearing what you're sharing now, I think really just confirms why she had the sort of concern she had about the whole situation. And really, she did what we did, we could help. And so anyway, as Gwen and Joe's relationship continued, their social interaction among the royalty there, as we've discussed, became a full-scale rebranding as Gwen's little giddy Gigi persona emerged, and she began to color all she did. Her personal conduct and application of Remnant social convention radically changed. And what I'm saying is that we already touched on it, how the Remnant congregation just rose up and embraced Joe and Gwen as you know, the second coming of, you know, of Abram and Sarah, you know. But how else did that play out within Remnant? I mean, that this sudden change of social roles and marital roles just had to just completely start impacting a lot of people. Can you recall any events or people or situations that would reflect that?
Well, I mean, I guess we're kind of referring a little bit to the changing doctrines too, right? I mean,
that's fair enough to say.
I think a lot of that is, I mean, yeah, what was it affecting people? Sure. I mean, Gwen was disillusioned in her own marriage to David Shamblin, so the doctrine's subtly mutating. I mean, she can't, and she's not going to be able to easily justify everything happening. Her, you know, David Shamblin leaving and Joe coming onto the scene or remarriage in her position. That's not going to be easy. So she's, I mean, things have to be reshaped at this point.
Right.
Within RF, you know, their theology, they're going to have to carve out some exceptions to this stuff. And, you know, that it's always going to align with whatever Gwen desires. And I just think that things that people thought that were permanent were no longer permanent. Yeah. And everything is turning into more situational. You know, at this point, I think that's fair to say. You know, if a marriage is spiritually dead, quote unquote, you know, that's tough term. But if one spouse isn't fully devoted to God, you know, or by extension to Remnant, then separation or replacement is now justified.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. This is the new shining beacon of Gwen's new. She just found the new way, right? And
I would imagine relationships began to really change in that degree. People began realizing, hey, maybe the grass really is greener on the other side of the septic tank.
Right. Exactly. And I think, you know, you mentioned, you know, Gwen, I think you said her Gigi mode, right? I mean, that was,
yeah,
this whole time period. I mean, that's, obviously, that's what she was called by the grandkids. You know, that's just that's her alter ego that I started calling her. But I mean, she loved that fantasy. You know, this whole thing was like, it's almost like a big drama. It's a big fantasy. She loved the concept, even the name Gigi. It's like kind of French or something, flowery with the dresses and ribbons. Yeah. And now she's got a new man coming in, and Gigi is like her softly speaking, you know, holy, loved, beautiful woman.
And like she were capturing her youth, really, wasn't it?
It was. I almost looked at it almost like she was just, maybe this is, I don't know what any other word to call it, but like fluffy. You know, she was, it was, there was no substance. There was zero substance. It's a lot of stuffing in Remnant. And she was just a lot of stuffing, and she was the same. She's a false preacher, and she's got incredibly large amounts of immaterial stuffing. Like it was hype, you know, it was all hype, and it's things made, built up to look like they're real. They're made to look substantial.
She was living the dream.
Whole thing, it's a house of women queens, you know, playing cards, and it's, there's zero anything of a hardened rock beneath it all. This is in my opinion. And it's the base, you know, that's the basis of it. And, you know, it was a personality shift. You know, Joe's coming in, and of course people aren't, you know, notice it. You know, she's I was grossed out by this at this point. We talked about her her looking like a schoolgirl with a crush kind of thing.
Exactly.
I'm grossed out by it because she's like wearing prostitute like looking dresses.
Yeah.
And she's wearing like these high up skirts that anyone in my Christian high school would have been kicked out if they wore what going
with yeah.
any girl. But you know, and she has those awful looking, those spray tan skinny legs. And she's wearing like these huge heeled shoes, walking around like some kind of stripper or something. While at the same time, like she's trying to be like some kind of moral high authority woman pope or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned the subtly changing, you know, like her philosophy, but these were outward signs that she never really fully believed with all her heart in her own remnant doctrines. That's why I was saying Gwen stopped believing in Gwen. Gwen stopped believing in remnant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She stopped believing these doctrines were correct, in my opinion. I think she was ready to drop her own BS. She's ready to drop any reservations within the presence of some awesome, majorly good-looking Hollywood actor.
Mm-hmm.
And glamour is the new form of these women's self-expression. It's now glamour.
Yeah.
It was appearance, but now it's glamour.
And right.
Almost anything was good for her at this point.
Right. Godliness, she'd already been, you know, been on the record of what godliness supposedly was. And right. But for them, godliness was control, was manipulation, was stifling, was pressure. To be godly was to be controlled, to be managed, to be micromanaged. That's the reason why she was so tired all the time, why leadership was becoming mm-hmm. so cold, because it's hard to be the Holy Spirit. If you believe the Holy Spirit doctrine is what it is, the Holy Spirit is God the Spirit. He is everywhere. God is a spirit. He does not have flesh and bones. God the Spirit is everywhere, moving and shaping lives and touching people and speaking to them. Well, it's kind of hard for a flesh and bone, imperfect human being to do the same thing, but cults make a really good try at that. And Gwen certainly was one of those most diabolic I've ever seen try that, to micromanage people the way she set up a system to do. And it's just, frankly, she was pooped, and she's ready for a change. And of course, the whole movement was ready. I'm sure they weren't ready for this. And I'm sure the more unstable and more tragic situations began to result in terms of divorces and people being counseled to do this or do that, which wouldn't have happened 5 years in the past, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing we're looking at. We're not looking at repression anymore. We're looking at catharsis. People exploding, people being allowed to do as they will, as long as they kept those last 10 pounds of sin off of them.
Right.
That's what's going on in Remnant at this point.
Right. And I think we can kind of boil a lot of it down to it's based off lust.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, it's not based on scripture as far as I'm looking at, or at least anything remotely kind of, you know, older style Christianity, established Christianity. This was just, you know, in my opinion, it's just another shocking chapter we're about to see played out.
Yeah, carnality. Absolutely. Where the carnal was now in charge of the spiritual.
And, yes.
And the tragedy is that that true Christian spirituality resolves that in such a way. I don't have time to get into it, but I will just say one thing, is that people walking in the spirit don't fulfill the lust of the flesh. I will say that again. People walking in the spirit, in God's spirit, don't fulfill the lust of flesh for a very good reason. It's because they're trying to live a life that denies that through the power of Christ and their faith. Not by somebody knocking it into their heads that they should look a certain way or act a certain way or be something placed at a certain time. It's an entirely different spirituality at that point. But that's what Remnant's been getting all this time. And of course, that human control thing was just dissolving at this point. And like you said, we're in new territory altogether.
Yeah, and she was so excited about introducing to the church, you know, This is a new Sikh spiritual concept.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the old church's teachings of staying in a godly union, they're now thrown out the Sikh window from the Library of Ashlam, right?
Yeah.
It's not worse than deciding to take a commandment from God and throw it away. But I mean, uh-huh. You know, it's like, but this was serious. I mean, this was,
yeah. Sure.
But I think that she was quoted, it was something like, there's no longer an expectation of once married, always married in the remnant. And I remember hearing that. And
Could you repeat that again? You said there was no longer expectation?
No longer an expectation of once married, always married. And I guess I'm kind of paraphrasing that, but she said there's no longer, you know, once married, always married in the remnant. That was on kind of their changing doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written out. And
And
she was, I mean, I know what she was talking about. She's comparing that to like what early remnant was teaching.
Right.
With, you know, supposedly counterfeit churches, you know, she was comparing it to like the once saved, always saved type thing. But now Gwen is twisting it into once married, always married.
Hmm.
And she, once again, Gwen is twisting scriptures to make sure she gets her own disgusting way. You know, she'd always been a rebellious, manipulative woman preacher. She had devious, you know, she had changed things. She'd done this for so many years, right? And so this changing stance, as we're talking about, you know, you said it's like it's not just affecting her,
right?
It's going through the whole place, you know. I think initially Remnant, you know, I think Remnant even had, in my opinion, kind of hard to understand marriage doctrines, because I think it was confusing, because I've already explained about my thoughts on the women running the place. But it had a form of kind of locking people in place. And, you know, divorce is portrayed as like rebellion against God. It's sinful, mm-hmm. You know, and like you're saying, you said it, the flesh, you know, they're not birthing spirit. That was the big remnant thing, birthing spirit, not birthing flesh. And that kept unhappy women or men, you know, bound into some situation, but they're bound under Gwen's authority.
Right.
And their only outlet before
and her management. Yeah.
And their only outlet before was checking in with Gwen and the counselors and leaders, relying on those people. That was their only outlet, and doubling down on the loyalty and Gwen's changing course. And now it's like justified, and it's opening like this dark door to many of these like remnant women. They'd long assumed these possibilities have been closed off, you know, and now these people that have been living for years with misery, emotional neglect, you know, any sort of unequally yoked spiritually in anybody's mind is now, these women can now lay the law down even more openly with their spiritually lacking husbands.
Right.
And this is, I know some people are going to kind of not like my take on some of this, because it seems like it's weighted towards anti-women, but this is what my take on a lot of it was. It was a massive feeling of liberation for mm-hmm. these women, is what, right. I took it as.
Right.
Gwen had found the divine loophole, and she, you know, she was, you know.
Yeah, because she became the divine loophole. She became the example. God sovereignly showed that this is the way it was going to be.
Right. And so all of a sudden, she's legitimizing all of their lusts, their longings this whole time.
Right.
For perfect remnant husbands. And that's another one of those, it's a changing target, I'm telling you. And all of a sudden, all over, you know, Brentwood, there's women that were like, looking to go out at night looking for these younger, wealthy men. You know, look at Elizabeth Singles Bar Ministry.
Yep. Exactly.
I mean, that Gwen was, this was opening it up, and all of a sudden, all these people with these unfulfilled, you know, desires, they're tired of these Christian men that they've been having to put up with.
Mm-hmm.
They're tired of these men they've been having to drag along with these way down teachings and these way down classes. They're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're tired of having to turn their husband into a counselor at Remnant because he's not fully getting it, or Gwen, you know, he's not fully on board. They're sick of it.
Right.
And they're seeing some of these young Remnant men studs on, you know, stage, like Jonathan Walters and people like that, well-dressed, you know, these young men lifted up by Gwen, lifted up by God. Now all of them want like a Gwen and Joe situation.
Yep.
These women, we all know the women, and it was almost the running joke. They always would imitate Gwen.
Oh, sure.
There were women that did their hair like Gwen. This is well established.
Yep.
They wanted to dress like Gwen. They wanted to dress their kids like Gwen dressed her grandkids. Mm-hmm. They're following the leader. And now they yep. all want Gwen and Joe's situation to happen to their own greedy right. selves.
So it's now anyone, yeah.
anyone who didn't, so any man now who doesn't fit this moving target of whatever these women deemed perfectly righteous in the moment, it's an ever-changing description of the perfect remnant man. It yeah. could change week to week. How a guy works, how he dresses, how he speaks, how he lifts his hands in church. They've all got a target on their heads now.
Yep.
You know, and so many people, this is where my Michaelis Black kind of side comes out. What I've been saying on my social media, so many people have said how this changing, you know, doctrine period, you know, how it hurts the poor women of Remnant. There's so many interviews of women talking about how this was, it's maddening. Yeah, I know it was maddening to the women, but I'm basically saying that this situation was frightening for the men in Remnant.
Oh, absolutely.
It was not necessarily just a problem for these, you know, secretly lusting women. That's what it was to me. That's what I was seeing.
Yeah. Yeah. These are the men who had been through hell on earth, had gone along with those women, had tried to play the game, had tried to, you know, do whatever it is that they felt they needed to do to keep the marriage going, to keep the family going, moving to Brentwood, becoming a part of the church, signing over everything to them, giving away all they could. These guys are just sitting there trying to manage it. They may not be the sexy guys up front, you know, on the camera screen. May not be the ones, you know, going out to dinner. But they're just the rank and file Joes, if I may use that word, the rank sure. and file guys, men who, like I said, have been basically emasculated. They've been
put in their place.
It all down.
They had already been put in their place over all these years.
Yeah.
You know, we know yeah. about the Remnant teach, you know, and it's not just Remnant, but it was in Remnant. The woman is the neck controlling the head. If a man's the head of the house, Gwen would say, well, the woman's the neck and she can steer where the head looks.
Right. Right. Exactly.
You think about that. So who's really running it? Mm-hmm. Who's really running it? And all of a sudden this comes out and it's, yep. the neck can decide to replace the head if it wants.
Right.
If it doesn't like how the head's doing it, the neck replaces it.
Right.
There is no, the authority, now they're being more, in my opinion, I'm just sitting there in my journal, like, this is exposing what I thought all along. There's yep. going to be complete chaos.
Yep.
You know there's going to be chaos.
Yep. There's ripple effects from not only from the bedroom, but down to the living room and then down to everything else. All of Remnant is being shaken in ways that are impossible to understate. Right. It really is.
And no man was safe.
Yeah.
Not Ted, not David. We saw how Ted got sat down. No man is safe.
Right. So in 2018, this dance they did became a dance macabre. That became a new two-step there in the halls of Ashkelon. And Gwen, at that point, was just reengineering her legacy to bury a checkered relational past in earnest. I mean, for me, this is the recertification of Gwen's patented chaos theory of school management. It was cubed and squared entirely by her own impulses. And so much started going on that year. That was the big year of change for everything. And there you are in the midst of it all. And you're just trying to shoot the rapids in the best way you could. And that's just the way it seemed to be going. So she moved ahead that winter and spring with that secret engagement to Joe that remained under wraps, even if she started divorce proceedings from your father. And that would end in 2018 in June with the divorce. In 2018, Gwen moved ahead with a secret engagement to Joe that remained under wraps, even as she started divorce proceedings from your father, which ended in a June 2018 divorce from him. So, I mean, that was kind of like the final, I guess, nail in the coffin. And it was I'm sure in any case, regardless of whether you're expecting or not, it was a jolting repudiation of her marriage to your father. Mm-hmm. How did that impact him and your family? Divorce is never an easy thing to ever see happen. But in with your unique situation, I'm sure it had to have a special coda, for lack of a better word.
It was, I think it was one of the worst times of my whole experience with Remnant. And that's saying a lot. This was hard on me too. It's not only I'm seeing my parents split finally, but you know, the remnant, Gwen, they're trying to get me to write or speak things against my own father.
Yeah.
To back her up. And I simply just wouldn't do it. I couldn't do it. He was being treated like some monster. There's constant pressure by Gwen and her loyal assistants. They wanted to get everybody to put David Shamblin down as much as possible, like in every meeting, everywhere you went. Gwen had all of the women of the local, you know, the church meet in the sanctuary at one point, and no men were allowed to go. And Elizabeth actually got up, and with Gwen's blessing, she's like effortlessly blasting her own dad for 30 minutes, making him sound like the world's most abusive husband or something. But it was tough. I mean, it was terrible. It was not as hard on Elizabeth, I think, like I mentioned, but it was hard on him, I think. Like I mentioned, we would go to lunch. I think he was just in a, I don't know, I think he was in a form of like shock. You know, I think I've already mentioned that, but he was just, it was hard. It's not something that he expected, right?
Yeah.
And Elizabeth, you know, like I said, she had got him and blasted him in church. You know, all these people everywhere I go, they're saying negative stuff about him. And they wanted people to write stuff. They came to my office and they wanted me to like write like a thesis, like to turn into Gwen.
A denouncing.
Like remember that they would say this. Everybody that worked at the office at Remnant, they said, you know, remember every negative thing you could ever think of concerning David Shamblin. So you're talking, that's like 15 years, 16 years. Anytime Gwen mentions something in any meeting to people complaining, they're asking everybody to remember as much as they can and then write it down and then send it in.
Yeah.
You know, and then also they're cruelly making up things that sound like he had been abusing Gwen. And like basically people get the hint, like the worse the better. And I'm not really included in a lot of the stuff. It's shocking. He was being equated with just this wicked person, like the devil. Almost, he's bashing, you know, Gwen, the innocent Bible following saint or something.
Of course, the usual blackening of character is what's required for such dramas like this. So this has been an ongoing thing ever since when the papers got dropped. That's what started going, this culture of denouncement on your father. It was open season on David Chamberlain.
Right. And I think what was hard on me too, because I mentioned, I was the only one who was going to go see him. There was kind of a weird phenomenon that was going on with him, and it weirded me out. But I was seeing something inside him. You have to understand, David Chamberlain is kind of, I mean, he's Church of Christ. He went to Bible, Harding, Bible College and all this kind of stuff. And I think he was having trouble just thinking how Gwen could possibly have done this, how she could have just made this change. They had been married for 40 years.
Right.
40 years. And this was not the same girl that he married and after UT in Knoxville, you know, the Christian Student Center.
Yeah.
But he wanted to believe she still was. Yeah. He wanted to believe there something could change. And I feel like all of a sudden I was in this role, like I had to be the bearer of bad news at every lunch. Like he was asking me how things are going. Is she saying anything, you know? It was hard. I started seeing there was a difference in me and David Chamberlain too. I told you there was a difference in me and Gwen already with us veering off, but I started seeing a difference in me and him, and it continued on basically the remainder of his life until he passed away in 2023. But I was seeing that he wanted to feel, to think the best, have hope with it. And I felt like I kept having to relay just the stuff that she'd been doing. He had been out of touch a little bit.
Yeah.
It caught him off guard because he hadn't been in Remnant.
Yeah.
He didn't know anything about the security. He didn't know anything about the guidance system. He didn't know. I never mentioned him that I was having people following me or people breaking into my house. He didn't know any of the stuff.
Yeah.
He stayed away from it. And I think it caught him off guard. The cruelty of Gwen caught him off guard.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me. It was hard for me because I had seen him, in my mind, I'd seen him standing up to Gwen in so many ways, you know, early on. And I had looked up to him for that for so many years. And now it's just like he didn't want to have anything to do with, you know, say anything negative about these arrogant women. And I was disappointed in it. We were finally hanging out talking about this, but he still wanted to win favor from Gwen. He still wanted to see his grandkids too, you know, keep in mind.
Oh, and, sure.
He was scared, and I was nervous because I saw how cruel Gwen really was.
Thanks for listening today as we explore just where are we going. Our prayer is that you have been encouraged and strengthened, and if necessary, challenged in your daily journey through life. Jesus is coming. You can fall with the night, or you can rise with the sun. The choice is yours. You can email us with questions and comments at feedback@spiritwatch.org. And if you need urgent personal spiritual help, email us at help@spiritwatch.org. We look forward to hearing from you. Please follow our podcasting at our Facebook page and our website at spiritwatch.org. This podcast is a production of Spirit Watch Ministries, taking heed that no man deceives you.
The race is not over.